Okie dokes. Where's my, are my, do I have my notes? Yes. Okay. Reggie, how you doing? We're still standing, right? I have to say, I'm proud of my, I guess my COVID prevention. Still standing here, not sick, and you're here at the studio, so you're doing good. So at least we're doing what we're supposed to do, and hopefully this won't last much longer. But here we are, so let's get started. I noticed that you don't bring your sandwich anymore. Is that just a health, a virus thing? I mean, eating in the studio used to be commonplace. I don't think you're going to be able to do that anymore. Right? Are you doing that on your own, or were you ordered? Oh, sort of half and half. Yeah, well, good for you. I know how important your submarine sandwiches are to you, so for you to give that up, this clearly, there's many sacrifices are being made. All right, I'm looking here at the board, and those needles are popping. Just, oh, they're actually, they can't wait for more words to come into the microphone so they could just keep moving back and forth. I could see the needles are very excited for this podcast, which is a good sign. So if the needles on the board are excited because they're jumping into their little areas, then we should be just as excited. So let's get started, okay? I'm all set. I'll give you my three S's. You write it down in the book. This is episode 206. Here we go. Three. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Star, star, smile, strong. Now we go. Ready? Three, two, one. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNplus.com or wherever you go to download your favorite podcast. Every day, every week, every month, whatever it is, wherever it is, we are there. So don't forget to subscribe to that platform, to rate this podcast, and most importantly, tell your friend. Send them a message, send them a text, send them a link, send them the good word that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion is certainly appreciated, and if we can spread the word around the world, even better. We are COVID-19 binge-worthy approved. The official association of the COVID-19 shutdown has given us the binge-worthy seal of approval, which means that this podcast is certified by the official COVID-19 shutdown commission that it is certainly worth your binge, what, activities? If you're a longtime listener of the podcast, thank you so much for coming back. If you're a newbie, if you will, welcome aboard. And whether you found us by accident or found us by reference or found us by divine intervention, however you found us, I'm glad you did. And if you like what you hear, I hope you'll continue to listen. And if you are a newbie and you haven't listened for too long, don't forget that you can go to the archives. Go to WGNradio.com. And go on, in fact, that's probably true. I don't even know if there's a WGN Plus anymore. I keep saying that. Go to WGNradio.com, and on the front page there, it says podcasts. Prompt there, and you'll boom, you'll go right in it. You'll see it listed there, Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, among the other 20 or so that are up there. So you can go back, and as I said, whether you are a long time or a new listener to the podcast, you can go back and enjoy some of our previous shows from the last month, the last 5 months, or even almost the last 4 years, as we are now officially in May. And I believe maybe by episode 20, this is 2006, or 206, I shouldn't say O. You know that. You're not supposed to say O. It's a zero. It's not a letter. I don't know how we got into that. But we all have, and I fall into it as well as anyone else, and I always try to stop myself. 206, that's this episode, which means you can go back into the archives and listen to all 205 previous episodes. And as I said, this month, now here we are in May, I have to go back to my daily planner from 2016 and see what day it actually, this podcast initially debuted. I believe it was around May 20th. I'm going to say around that, or the 19th or something like that. It was on a Monday. And so I have to look at my daily planner from 2016. I made a joke on my Facebook page the other day that the worst investment I've made in 2020 was my daily planner. It was certainly filled to the brim up until like mid-June. Lots of stuff planned and expected to go on for the first 6 months of the year, and now we're almost there, and I'm looking at from June on, and it's barren. even dentist appointments are getting canceled now. I always make this big point at the beginning of every year. I mention how I buy a new daily planner, a physical paper-bound daily planner, not one in a phone or any kind of little gizmo, but I actually buy the ringed daily planner, which you could find at a lot of stores, you know, department stores or Office Max or places like that, that have the calendar where you can write in your events. And I always say that I enjoy doing that, and I keep my old ones just as a reference point, but it's also fun to sketch out your year. I always say on New Year's Day, or the first week or so of a new year, that we are given a new, fresh page in our book of life, and it's up to us to fill those pages, to fill that page from top to bottom, and even in the margins, with cool experiences that will become great memories of your life. But you have to, that has to be an active exercise, not passive. You have to, you know, some things just happen, certainly. But if you want to create memories, you want to make some memories and cool experiences and things like that, you've got to go after them. So it's up to you to fill that page. Don't wait for that page to fill itself. And wow, I'd love to go back and hear what I said on January 1st, because I certainly was heeding my own advice until mid-March, when everything stopped. And wow, it stopped it stopped quickly and abruptly, and we're still there. And so yeah, lots of events and lots of special things in my daily planner have been canceled. I know I've at least now 8 Elton John concerts between the last week of March and mid-June. I was going to be attending 8 individual Elton concerts at different cities, including my hometown here of Chicago, but different cities around the country. Those have all been obviously postponed. I was supposed to see a few other shows, Southside Johnny and the Asbury Jukes which has been postponed until September. I was supposed to see Gordon Lightfoot, which has been postponed and hasn't had a new date. The Elton shows are supposedly going to be, rescheduled in 2021, but who knows? The way everybody's talking about large groups congregating and when that may even happen, and might it even happen by 2021? Who even knows? And then this year is a very special anniversary for my wife and me, and we had a once-in-a-lifetime trip planned. Our anniversary is in October, but we had a trip planned for more than a year, just based on availability. We were going to go on a cruise down the Nile. I've always wanted to see the pyramids and go to Egypt and see that. And so we had this amazing trip planned and for April. And of course, that's been canceled, and not sure if and when that will be rescheduled. So a lot of things have been put on hold. Certainly, as I said, in my daily planner, I was heeding my own advice. I was making things happen. I was hopefully creating some memories here. That was the goal, right? Don't sit back and let those and expect experiences and future memories to happen on their own. Go out and make sure they happen. And so I was following my own advice. COVID-19 apparently had some other choices. So yeah, the worst investment I had this year was buying my daily planner, because there's really no need for it. I've always enjoyed every day going and reading my daily planner and seeing what's ahead for the day and for the week. And putting a little X on the day. I always do that, little side slash as the day goes by. And now, I mean, it's so empty. Everything is just going by the wayside that sometimes I hate to admit it, folks. There are some days where I don't even put the slash on. I forget to put my slash in my daily planner, and I will then remember and go to my daily planner and look at it and go, oh my goodness, I haven't put a slash down in 4 days, because isn't every day Wednesday? What's the difference? I mean, there used to be something exciting about Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, you know? Now it's like, I don't know, is it Thursday or is it Sunday? It depends on what's on television. That's the way you can only gauge. And sometimes even that isn't a clue anymore. So, and I bought my daily planner in November. That's how anal I am. I bought my 2020 daily planner in November. Back then, there wasn't even a hint of a COVID. This coronavirus had not jumped from, you know, an anteater or a bat or a lab or whatever it came from. I don't think it even happened back then. Maybe it did, and we didn't even know about it in China in November. But in mid-November, I bought my daily planner, and I very meticulously had my 2019 one there so I could fill in all those kind of permanent dates of birthdays and anniversaries and things. And then as appointments would come up and events would come up, I would start to fill it in. And so by January 1st, I had a pretty nice, first half of the year already kind of set out. And now, not. I should say, I did get one event in right under the wire, right under the COVID-19 shutdown wire. I got one event in, which is ironic when I think about it now. I did go to New York City to see the Eagles at Madison Square Garden do their Hotel California show, which was a tour that they have obviously postponed now, but it had just started in early February, and they did three nights in New York, and I went to one of those shows on February 18th. What? 18th or 19th? I think it was 18th now that I think about it. February 18th. So I was in New York City, the epicenter of the COVID-19 virus here in the United States. I was in New York City on February 18th, and I must have a hell of a an immune system, because I do not have it. I mean, I haven't been tested, but I have never I have not shown any symptoms since this outbreak was first announced. And so, I mean, think about it. I went to two major airports, O'Hare Field here in Chicago and LaGuardia in New York. I was in at least, what, two cabs there and back. No, I actually took one of those express buses. But that was, you know, so that's everybody, you know, sits, who, you know, there's no deep clean going on at that time. February 18th, there was still not even a real threat. I remember, I mean, I never thought twice about going to that concert on February 18th. Nobody was even wearing any masks, really. And, yeah. So I saw one thing in my daily planner in terms of an event. I did get in under the wire, but everything else has been pushed back to 2021 or question mark. How can we even say 2021? You can't. I don't think you can really say that. I think we're saying it because it sounds far off and it sounds optimistic. But, and that was kind of what I wanted to talk about today. I don't know about you, but, you know, I mean, now we are in our, we're into our second month going into, now we're in May. And here in Illinois, in the Chicago area, we have a shutdown through the end of this month. I know a lot of states are reopening, a lot of controversy if it's too soon. And we will see with time if it was too soon or not. We will probably be able to know in a couple, 3 weeks in some of these states and some of these cities that have opened up to some extent if the virus has spread and it has spiked again. Hopefully it has not in those areas, but there seems to have been a little quick to go back, you know, kind of leapfrogging some things in kind of our own effort to get back to whatever normal means and our restlessness and our boredom. And I understand that, but my gosh, I still think that if we go back too fast, and we ruin whatever good work we've done on social distancing and flattening this thing out, I hope we don't go backward. Now it is approaching summer. It is approaching the warmer climates here. There's been a theory that the COVID virus, like many flu viruses, may not be able to withstand the warm weather and maybe disappear or certainly slow down. But then we have to be worried about the fall. But here's what's been driving me crazy over the last several weeks. Not only has there been a rush to open things, but for the last month and a half, it's been this constant drumbeat about bringing back sports. And I understand it. I understand that we're trying to bring back some normalcy. People are getting tired. They're getting restless. They're getting antsy. They're getting stress-related. And, you know, sports is this great pastime, this great distraction in many people's lives, for males and females. And I this is, even if you're not a big sports fan, this, I'm not talking about majors. I'm not getting into a big sports talk here, because I'm talking about our society. I'm talking about our culture. And we are looking, it seems to me, we are looking at sports as some great healing effect. Like it will help us psychologically and emotionally feel as if there's light at the end of the tunnel if sports comes back. And I understand why. Believe me, look, I'm a sports fan. I was a participant as well as a fan for most of my life. Been playing sports since I was 3 or 4 or 5. Organized sports, baseball, football, basketball, hockey, you name it. I played it all. Racquetball, tennis. I've been very active in all types of different sports since a little kid, and I've always been a fan of it. So I understand it, and I enjoy it. But at the same time, I also am looking at this from a reality standpoint. You know, and I used to golf too, and I don't golf as much as I used to. I'm not golfing at all anymore, obviously, but I don't golf. I used to go every week. For about 10 years, I went every week I golfed, and then I kind of got burned out on it. And I still golf occasionally, but not as much as I used to. And, you know, this was a big sign, like we're going to open the golf courses. And everybody got all excited, you know, we're going to open the golf courses. Now, I could see early on when this was happening, and we were talking about the shutdowns, and looking at this from a realistic standpoint about congregating. I just told you earlier, you know, I love to go to concerts and different events like that. So, yeah, I've got skin in the game here. Because don't forget, I mean, I told you, I have all these events that I had tickets to. Well, most of those tickets, you know, those tickets are not being refunded, at least not now. Because those events have been postponed, and I do want to go see them if they ever happen, I've got some money tied up in these concerts and these other events. And even in our vacation. Now, we're not going to lose that money, but it's sort of sitting in a bank because we hope to rebook it. So I've got skin in this game. I want things to get back to quote-unquote normal as soon as possible. I don't know what normal is going to be. I think we're gonna seriously, you keep hearing it, but strap in, folks. There is going to be a new normal, and it's going to be very different. I don't know about you. I've even when I watch reruns, on a lot of the stations, sports stations, they've been playing some old games, and or anytime you look at anything, where there's crowds. If you just watch anything from 6 months ago, it's not 20 years ago, it's not 60 years ago, it's 6 months ago. Whenever you see a large crowd, you know, congregated from something in the past, you know, 4 or 5 months ago, doesn't even that look strange now? It's like, it's odd. It's like, whoa, why are all those people in one spot? There may be a time when we say, remember when people used to get together in big crowds like that without any masks on? Remember when people used to sit next to one another like that or walk into a parking lot or be at a festival with 100,000 people with no masks and no social distancing and no whatever's going to be out there? Those might be now historical pictures. But like I said, I've got skin in the game here. So I would love, you know, for us to be able to get back in large groups. But I understand there's a need for optimism. And I understand there's a need for, you know, hope and getting people through this. I get it. I get all of that. But as I've also talked on many times is that I also think that by promising things, instead of being very honest with people, I think you're doing more harm than good in the long run. Certainly in the short term, you know, it helps people, you know, get through the day. And nobody in May of 2020 wants to hear that they may not be able to go on a vacation, or they may not be able to go to a baseball game or a football game or a concert or a racetrack. Or any kind of major, or you know, a farmer's market, or you know, a craft show, whatever it is, you know, whether, you know, a theater, a live theater, a movie theater, wherever there's a large congregation of people, no one wants to say right now in May of 2020 that it may be December of 2021 or January of 2022. Before that happens, But that is a real possibility. Because I can't really see, without a vaccine, without some kind of reliable, tested, either vaccination or medical therapy, not to prevent it, not to cure it, but if you get it, to at least minimize the effects of it and its contagious ability, how can you, in a reasonable and responsible way, allow people to congregate in a 20,000 seat stadium or a 90,000 seat stadium, like say for college football, or 100,000 people at a music festival outside, or even 20,000 or 30,000 at your local summer festival that has foods and games and fireworks. How can you do that in a reasonable and responsible way without being afraid that you're going to contaminate and get a lot of people sick? Without those safeguards, without that vaccine, and don't forget, this vaccine is not going to be a cure. It's not about curing this. This is a vaccine that hopefully will keep you healthy enough and fight this vaccine or this virus if you get it. But we're not killing the virus. This COVID-19 virus is going to be around, from the way it sounds. We're trying to find ways to mitigate it. We're trying to find ways to lessen its impact. So it's going to be a constant fight, but I can't believe without a vaccine that we'll be able to do that. And so I keep hearing this stuff about, we're going to bring back baseball, or we're going to bring back hockey, or we're going to bring back basketball. And there's all there for the last month and a half, every week or so, there's a new story and a new possible configuration of how to bring back these sports. And all of them, at least in the short term here, all of them involve no fans, no spectators. This is strictly for people to watch at home, to be broadcast and watched at home where we are still hunkered down. So it's not like you're gonna be able to go there. They're not talking about bringing back sports as a spectator sport in terms of in person. But I still think that even that is irresponsible. I understand why. We're all hoping for something. And, baseball especially has this nostalgic, aura around it, the history of baseball and the great speech by James Earl Jones in Field of Dreams. It's baseball, Ray. It's baseball which brought people together. And, of course, there's no crying in baseball, except in the Little League World Series. There's a lot of crying in the Little League World Series. I get it. We are looking for any ray of hope, any light at the end of the tunnel, any sense that we can get back to something that feels like normal. And in for many cases, and in some people's minds, the return of our sporting distraction, of our sporting events, this great bonding event will be good for the psyche. I get all that. But then I have to look at the realities of this. If we've been sitting here for the last month and a half worried about the spread of this virus, the impact it has on people, the death it is bringing on. These are major numbers. More than 1 million people now in this country have tested positive for the coronavirus. Hundreds of thousands have died. Well, not hundreds yet. I mean, we're at, 60 or 70? We may get to that number. But tens of thousands have died, and there's every chance that as time goes on, we will get into the hundreds of thousands. People have already been talking about how more people now have died of the coronavirus than died in the Vietnam War. I think the Vietnam War had about 55,000 Americans passed away, and we are now at past that number. So there's death here. There's extreme illness involved here. Hopefully, I'm very grateful in that I don't know anyone in my immediate circle of friends or my immediate circle of family who has come down with this. So I'm thankfully I have not had that experience, but certainly I have seen enough on television and read enough from people who have had this strike their family in not only the sickness but even in death, and they understand how serious this is. And now we're even finding out more about this. You know, that's the other thing. We don't know everything about this yet. We're trying to leapfrog, and this is not a known virus. So every day we're learning about this, and we're going to continue to learn about this coronavirus 10 years from now. Do you understand that? This is not just some, this is killing people in a major way. This is not a bad flu. It's not just a bad flu. That's kind of the way it was being initially talked about. And it's this virus. Initially, it was flu-like symptoms. But now, the more that you read, people, doctors and experts are now wondering what will, even if you beat the disease, even if you beat the virus, it's not a disease, even if you beat the virus, who's to say what lasting effects it may have still left, depending on your health, depending on your immune system, depending on the health of different organs. We don't even know the impact of this. This is not just a bad cold. If it was just a bad cold, we would not have had to shut down the world, which is basically what we've done and are still doing. And even though we are looking for, we're looking at more optimistic and more positive numbers, we are still right in the thick of this. And that's what's scary is, even though we're still in the thick of this, there is this weird prevailing sense that it's over with. And that's conflicting, and that's what's scary about this. I really am concerned about these other states that have opened up beaches and salons and tattoo parlors, while we really don't know if this thing has curbed itself. And I would hate to see the good work that we have done, because initial projections were seeing 100,000 or 200,000 people in the United States dying of this. And now we've, through social distancing and shutting things down, we're hopefully not going to hit that number. But who's to say? You just don't know. And in our, and if you listen back to my early podcasts, I said, it's not just patience. It's resisting. Resistance, to me, was the biggest thing we had to fight. It's exactly what I feared is happening now. The resistance, after a while, the restlessness, the boredom, to want to do things we did before too quickly. And that's exactly where we're at, and that's what scares me. And bringing back sports, to me, right at this time, I think is, at least team sports, is very is wishful, and if it does come back, I think it's irresponsible. I have to say that, as much of a sports fan as I am, and I'm sorry if you're a sports fan, you say, "Oh, Jim, you're full of crap." I know what you're saying. I know why you feel that way. But is watching a baseball game more important than seeing people die? And what if it was someone in your family? You know, the thing is that it hasn't. Most people do not have it in their lives. I mean, we've got 360 million people in the country. So even if 50 or 60 thousand have died, that is such a small figure that most people in our country do not have firsthand experience with this. So they think like, well, what's the big deal? Let's get going. But let it hit you or your family, and I think you have an immediate change of view, change of view on that. So I keep hearing this. Now, I don't know if the sports leagues are serious about this or if they are playing a role. You know, last month, I believe, President Trump said that he had met with the commissioners, the heads of all the major sports in the country. And, you know, it wasn't broadcast or anything, but he said, oh, we had this good meeting and they want to get back as soon as they can. Okay, all the happy talk. I get it. I also wonder in that meeting, was it really to say, look, we all know you can't come back. Organized team sports cannot come back. But, you know, it's so important to the psyche of this country to keep us going that, you know, can you just on a weekly basis keep planting ideas and stories of and possible openings? And, you know, can you just continue to sort of push these new dates farther and farther just so people can have a sense of hope? Because if we say baseball is canceled in April for the season, if we say hockey season, which was almost ending, the actual season was ending, the playoffs were about to start. But if we just say hockey for the, you know, even though the season was more than halfway over, it was almost finished, the regular season before the playoffs, it's done. If we're going to say basketball was in the same situation, the playoffs were about to start in a month or so, it's done. If we were to go even in March and April and say that professional football season is off for 2020, which of course would mean, don't forget, without a football season in 2020, in February of 2021, we don't have a Super Bowl. Talk about disappointment and rage, right? The Super Bowl? So I wonder if these almost weekly stories about the major team sports resuming their seasons, if they're just propaganda or if they're real. Now, I remember at the outset of this, just talking with people, talking with my wife and saying, look, the only possible sports that I could even see in the midst of all this, if you're going to talk about social distancing and and this whole idea of quarantine and separation and isolation to mitigate the spread, then the only real major sports that would even be possible to stage in this atmosphere would be individual sports like tennis or golf, of the major sports. But then you almost have to even question tennis too. I don't know. We don't know. Does this virus live on the ball? You're hitting the ball back and forth. I don't know. I mean, golf, once again, tennis, individual sports, perhaps. We have to get into the science of it. But on its face, it would seem that tennis, two players, so that's fine. They're certainly more than 6 feet away. That's fine. You know, even if they have the ball person who, comes and runs and gets the ball after it hits the net, that they're away. The judges are away. Once again, obviously no spectators at any of these sports. But in terms of getting new live events on TV to help pick up people's spirits, to give them a distraction and to give them hope, maybe, okay? On its face, it would seem to me that tennis would be one of those sports that you'd be able to do within a social distancing atmosphere. And as I said before, golf, another one. Most of the time, if you go golfing with somebody, you rarely see them until you're at the green, right? Everybody's hitting balls in all different directions. I have no problem social distancing when I play golf. So I understand. You know, once again, you're at the tee. Everybody stands away from you. I want no spectators, obviously, because, my gosh, spectators are right on top of each other as well as right on top of the golfers. So you can't have spectators. But as a golf match, at least, that is televised, that would maybe help people with the distraction and feel like there's hope, I would get that. You know, the players could go up to the tee, 6 feet away, they hit their ball, they're rarely in the seam, they're on the putting green, they stay away. You know, now apparently even on the golf courses that they've opened, there's a new thing here, you know, they don't have the ball to reach into the cup. Could be a possible transmission of the disease. So there's coverings on the cup. You're not supposed to touch the flag stick. There's no rakes. There's no carts. So there's a lot of restrictions even within, you know, the game of golf. But at least on its face, it is social distance friendly. So I would say if you're going to bring back some kind of sporting event or events to help the psyche of the world and help the psyche of this country, tennis and golf seem to be the most logical and the most responsible. I still think it's a little early, but if we're pushed to this, if we have to do this just because we're going to have people with torches like in the, you know, Frankenstein movies, you know, storming the castle because we want our sports, then maybe those two. But I really can't see any. I can't see soccer happening. Once again, there's, you know, and certainly not the way the soccer fans are. They're quite a bunch. But no, there's too much. Any team sport, I will go out on a limb and just say that. Any major team sport, I cannot see coming back in the next 6 to 8 months. I think it would be irresponsible. And you say, screw you, Jim. I want to watch baseball. I get it. So do I. I played baseball for more than 20 years. I love going to hockey games. I watch sports. I watch sports as much as anyone else. But I also think that we have to be smart and responsible. And we can't be selfish. And I think that's, it's selfish to want to have these major sports come back. And selfish on many levels. I don't know who's the worst victim or the worst villain here, but there is a lot of blame to go around here. This is not just about, well, we're doing this as a public service to help the psyche. That's the way it's being sold. But the fact of the matter is there's a hell of a lot of money on the line for a lot of different groups who it is in their best interest to get some kind of sports up and going. Aside from this altruistic reasoning of helping the psyche of the country, there's a lot of money at stake here. Players not being paid, broadcast rights, stadiums, jobs, work, whatever. There's a lot of agents, players being or not being paid, you know, gate receipts. There's a lot of money on the table that is going out. So when you think about this, you know, your friendly neighborhood sporting commissioner is not just worried about getting sports back to help the country. They're looking at their balance sheets too, folks. So keep that in mind. But I do believe so. But some of these proposals of how to bring sports back, once again, no spectators initially. So this is purely broadcast. So right away, it tells you that there's a broadcast element of terms of how much baseball and football and hockey get paid by the by the networks that's not being paid. So remember the underlying roots here. But let's just talk about it from a, forget about the greed angle. I'm not going to even talk about the greed angle. I'm not talking about the sporting angle. I'm talking about responsible actions in our society of making sure that we don't spread this virus, because that's our main goal here. And I believe that if you bring sports, major team sports back, you are threatening the overall health of people. Not only the participants, but as we've seen, how this virus spreads. But, so, I mean, so hockey and basketball were in their seasons and they were almost done. So now there's talk that they would have a shortened season, or they would go right to the playoffs and somehow play empty stadiums, somehow play, you know, and they're devising, you know, the travel and the quarantining and, you know, breaking up the teams into different divisions, or as I said before, just going right to the playoffs based on the final standings or whatever. But all that other stuff, that's smoke and mirrors. If we're sitting right now in a world that we're trying to mitigate the spread of this disease, how can you play hockey for the safety of those players and the safety of the other people around them, the trainers, the Zamboni driver who flattens out the ice in between periods, all the people that even in a shrunken version of this, without any fans there, which takes out a major part of it, right? No concessions, no parking. You know, what makes me laugh is they're saying, oh, well, you know, we want to bring back sports because it's such a major employer. It's going to help bring the economy back. Well, no, it's not. No, it's not. This is my point about selfishness. It's going to give us something to watch on television. Because if there's no fans there, this is not going to be any kind of economic generator in terms of jobs, in terms of people's livelihoods. There will be no vendors. There will be no concessions. There will be no people in the parking lots to park your car or to take your money. There will be no ushers. There will be no bars open. So what are you talking about? Don't BS the people. I had to laugh when they were opening up the golf courses here, the public courses, and even the private ones. They were saying that there will be no carts, there will be no clubhouse open. People will book their tee times online. They will show up. 6 feet distances, two people. You know, not even foursomes, two people. They had to institute that because they can't trust people to get together in a group of four. Because you know that people aren't going to be 6 feet away. Still got to treat people like babies. But they're saying, well, you know, the golf industry, employs so many people and generates X amount of millions of dollars. So we have to get golf courses back open. But not in this. But they're not going to be generating. It's not going to. People's jobs aren't coming back. If there's no clubhouse open, that means nobody is there serving food. Nobody's selling you teas or balls or gloves. Nobody's taking care of the carts. Nobody's filling them with gas. Nobody's fixing them if they break. So don't tell me, people aren't going to, if you open up the golf courses, not even one-tenth of the people that are usually working at the golf course will be working there. So it's not some economic engine. It's an economic engine when they're open up to the full capacity in a full way. But that's not what's happening here. So don't tell me how opening the golf course is anything more than just allowing, people that have cabin fever who want to play golf. Because that's all it is. In this version of golf course being open, there's not like 50 million people going back to work because of this. This is because a lot of restless guys want to get on the golf course. This is what they do. They want to get away from the house. They want to get away from everything else. And they're dying to get in the golf course and bet some money and be guys. But in this version of the golf course is opening, it's not some economic engine. It's not all of a sudden going to change the economy. Because most of the people that are associated with running a golf course are not going to be at the golf course. And it's the same thing here if you bring back, you know, a major sport. It's not some economic engine in a spectatorless environment. It's purely selfish means. We want entertainment. We want to see our sports. At the risk of those players and people associated with them. And we saw how, in a small area, one person can affect and infect 15 or 16 people and so on and so on. How do you think these numbers have gotten so big so fast? Because people have not been following the rules. And this virus does spread quickly and easily if you don't practice social distancing. How do you play a hockey game with social distancing? You're hitting people. You're right up on them. If you ever played hockey, you know that that there's spit flying everywhere. Now, they may say, every player is going to wear a shield over their face. I'm sure they would say that, you know, to stop that. Okay, fine, but you're still hitting someone. When you hit, you exhale. So to me, unless hockey players have some immunity to this disease or this virus, I think that's irresponsible. They're playing. Most organized sports is in direct violation of every social distance rule that we have been living by in the last month and a half to stop or mitigate the spread of this virus. Every major team sport, the way the game is played, breaks every one of those rules. Social distancing, breathing, spitting, covering up. Hockey, you're on top of people. Could the coronavirus live on the puck? I don't know. Could it live on your stick? I don't know. If I'm the goalie, I'm afraid of that. My gosh, the goalie, if there's a coronavirus that can live on the puck, well, then the goalie is going to be the first one who's going to get sick. Because they're shooting that thing at him, and he's smothering it and holding it. Basketball? You might as well. What they should do with if they bring basketball back before there's a vaccine, they might as well, the basketball itself, they should put those little crowns, those little hooks, that the coronavirus looks like, you know, when you've seen the picture of the coronavirus, they do a 3D model of it. It's round. It has all these little protrusions around it, which is one reason why it's so contagious, because it hooks on. You might as well put those little hooks on the ball itself, because you basically, in basketball, you are passing around you are literally and physically passing the coronavirus to everybody on the court. Everybody who touches that ball has the chance to get the coronavirus, because in basketball, once again, there is sweating, there is spitting. You are guarding people. You are not 6 feet away. You are right up next to them. You are breathing on them, and you are and all those droplets are falling on the ball, and you're taking those droplets that if you are contaminated, you don't know about it, you pass it to someone else, you are literally passing the disease to everyone on the court. So I don't see how that's responsible. Now you say, well, Jim, they're going to take the temperatures. unless there is an established test that's reliable, you cannot be sure that every person who has touched that ball does not have it. Don't forget, you know, there's 10 guys on the court. There's more guys on the bench. There's a coach. There's the guys, you know, the managers who take care of all the equipment. There's the trainers. There's the equipment guys who, you know, there's a lot of ancillary people around. And we can't really even, we don't even know how reliable these tests are. But basketball, to me, is the most scary of them all, because you're literally passing the virus as part of the game. The ball becomes the virus. You touch the rim, you touch the backboard. It could be anywhere. You're gonna, 1 minute you're telling me to wash off all these, if I touch a box that comes, or my mail or a newspaper, you're telling me to immediately Clorox the surface. Meanwhile, players are going to fall on, you know, they're going to slip and fall on the floor where it could be living. They all do touch the rim when they dunk. So the COVID virus could be living on the rim. What are we talking about here? This is fantasy. Unless we don't care. Unless we are so selfish that we don't care. And you know what? And so then they go back, and then all of a sudden, what happens? One or two players get it, and then they have to shut down the league again. So now all of your happy thoughts now are sad and even worse, because now we're back down to, well, we've taken 10 steps back. And we went through all this rigmarole to get this back started. And within 3 games, 5 players wind up being positive, and you got to shut the whole league down again. Hockey and basketball, I don't see how you could play those games in a COVID world. What kills me is I'm loving to seeing how they're going about, like they're saying that football season is on. They just had their draft last week, a couple of weeks ago, and everybody is, they're acting like football. No, how can you play football in a social distancing COVID-19 prevention world that we are in right now? Without a vaccine. Now, once again, I preface this all by saying without at least a vaccine, or without some medical therapies, that if somebody does get it, there is some reliable medicine that will relieve those symptoms and hopefully stop the contagious nature of it. That is the scenario that has to be in place before you could bring back contact team sports. But football, because, you know, it's only May and football starts in September, and that's far away. So they're going about their business once again like there's no problems with football. What are you talking about? You are on top of people. When they line up, they are inches away, not feet. They are tackling. They are on top of one another. Spitting and biting is a part of the game. You don't even see what happens in a scrum of football when there's all this tackling going on. And having somebody who played, as I said, I'm talking from experience because I played all these sports. You're breathing heavy. We've seen that even when we're told to wear a mask, because even when we talk, we could spread the virus. Well, that means that when the quarterback's saying hut, 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 I can only imagine how many droplets are flying out of his mouth. So does that mean that are the players going to wear masks? Are the football players going to wear masks? I would think they have to. Because if you've ever tackled anyone, if you ever played football, and I have, I've been tackled and I have tackled people. When you hit someone, you exhale. Oof. You're breathing, it's coming out of you. That's what you do. You exhale when you hit someone. So if 5 guys are all hitting you at the same time, how many droplets are flying in the air? And you say, Jim, but they're going to take their temperatures before the game. Okay, fine. So once again, you're gonna get all this together. You're gonna get all these things together, and then one or two players on each team comes down with it, and you have to shut the thing down. And now that's even worse. There's one thing to have something canceled. It's another thing to have it started and then canceled. When you just talk about your disappointment, you're able to put it out of your mind if it never happened easier than when it was there and then it was taken away. So all this talk about football starting in September, especially when that's when, if there is a time when the weather starts to get cold again, if this is a warm weather kind of cold weather type of virus, just when football starts in September and October, when the temperature starts to go down, you're going to be playing a contact sport where people are hitting one another and not social distancing and spreading droplets of sweat and and saliva everywhere. We're talking about the mouth and the eyes. So what are they going to do? You know, once they're going to wear screens on their helmets. Fine. There's so much in a contact sport like football. It's impossible to say that you are going to be able to stop the transmission of that disease. So that's a myth. That's fantasy. But yet, we're going ahead. I don't know if this is just propaganda or if, because if these people really believe this, I can't, then they are the most, you know, cockeyed optimists I've ever heard. The baseball thing has been driving me crazy because they have been floating 17 different ways to get baseball started again. Apparently, even though what I love about this is everybody in the last 15 or 20 years has been writing about how baseball is no longer the national pastime, right? That's all they said. It's no longer the national pastime. Football has taken over. But now suddenly we have to get baseball back. Now, once again, from a socially distancing area, I would say that baseball is possible. Aside from the catcher, the batter, and the umpire, everybody is a safe distance away. Okay? I'll give you that. But there's also, when you run down to first base, as I said, when you run down the first base and when somebody is running, they're breathing, they're sweating. When you hit first base, you exhale and you're right by the first baseman. When there's a double play, you're sliding right into the player. You can't help but breathe. So are baseball players on the field going to all be wearing masks? I don't know. Will they want to? Because they're certainly not going to look cool if they are. And that's all part of this too, you know. Don't forget the macho cool factor of all this. Are all these players going to want to wear masks? They're not going to look as cool as they usually do. The baseball player up to bat with a mask on, a pitcher with a mask on, is not going to look cool. So are they going to go for that? I don't know. You know, they've got all, you know, all these baseball players have all their giant beards. They're going to have these masks. I won't be able to see their cool beards. And once again, they're talking about realigning the league so that there's here's the bottom line, if you want to get down to this. The reason we watch sports is because of the end game, to win the championship. At the end of the day, all of these major sports are going to, if they come back without a vaccine, that's the preface, they're all rearranging and coming up with alternative versions of the game, alternative divisions and alternative ways to play the game, which means to me that it's not real. I don't think if hockey comes back, you cannot have a 2020 Stanley Cup champ. That's illegitimate. You did not finish the season. And now you're playing some some half-assed kind of playoff just for the sake of it. I don't think that that Stanley Cup is legit. If you play basketball, same thing. There's no world champion that year. Baseball, they're talking about completely realigning all the divisions, all the leagues. Here's my question. If you're a big baseball fan, do you really watch with any interest a spring training game? If you're a hockey fan, do you really watch a preseason game? If you're a football fan, do you really watch a football preseason game? They want to get rid of the preseason games in football because nobody even cares about them. That's what any of these sports returning now without a vaccine or without a medical therapy to ensure health or at least some kind of prevention. All of these are basically exhibitions. They're like preseason games. And after the first week, I guarantee you, if baseball comes back, it's supposedly not, you know, we have to bring baseball back. And I guarantee you, within a week, the novelty will be gone and no one will care. And no one will watch in any big numbers. The first games, yes, ratings will go out. There'll be stories, the ratings fine. And within a couple of weeks, since baseball is going down in popularity anyway, and there's really it's going to be an odd version of the game. And can you really have a World Series in this? If they start, the earliest they're going to start is July. That's usually at the halfway part of the season. That's the All-Star break. You got a half a season. If you could say that's legitimate and that you have a World Series winner, then that means you don't need to play 162 games every year. Then just play 80. Don't start in late March and go till November. If you can, if in your minds that's legit, if there's a legitimate World Series winner that's on the books for 2020 and you only played 80 games, then you have delegitimized the entire sport by giving that some credence. Because now you've proven that you don't need to play 162 games to be a World Series winner. So this is all exhibition. This is all selfishness. And it could be deadly. I don't know if they're doing this just to keep our spirits up, but I have to say, as much of a sports fan as I am, and you say, Jim, you certainly don't sound like a sports fan. No, I'm exactly a sports fan. I don't want to see the sports that I love delegitimized just because some people are bored and restless. And they don't care about putting people in danger, mainly the players. And don't ask the players. Of course the players want to play. They have no logic. A sport, an athlete, I know. I've done it myself. Athletes love to play the game. They lie about injuries. They want to play. This is all they've been geared to do. So you can't ask a player. There's no logic there. They're not thinking of their safety. They're not thinking of any of that. Until one of them gets sick. But, you know, players do this all the time. They lie about injuries. Pitchers, their arms are hanging, and they tell the coach, no, I could keep going. And then they throw their arm out, and then they're out for a year and a half because they have to have surgery. Because they had to pitch that extra three innings that they knew their arm was hanging. So you can't talk to the players. They're not the ones to go to. You can't talk to the agents who are the ones who are floating all these different leagues and these different configurations because they want their players to play so they get paid. Because if the players don't get paid, the agents don't get paid. So once again, there's a lot of behind the scenes motivations here, but ultimately there's this thought that bringing back our beloved sports is going to bring back our economy and bring back our psyche. There is going to be more danger and more negative effects that this could do to our psyche by bringing back our sports too early. I'm sorry, folks. I'm just as restless as you are. I'm just as disappointed that things are canceled. I'm just as bored at times as you are. But this is real. This is serious. And if we are adhering to social distancing, and if we are looking at these numbers and these death tolls every day and looking at them on a realistic standpoint, then how the heck can we really be talking about bringing back team sports in any way, because they break all the rules? Strike three, bringing back baseball. That's a strikeout in my book. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Don't forget, every Monday a new episode is posted at WGNradio.com. Just go to the podcast section. Or go wherever you find your favorite podcast. We're there. Don't forget to subscribe and rate this podcast. And tell your friends that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. I hope you've enjoyed episode 206. I'm Elton Jim Toronto. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. Your loyalty and devotion is much appreciated. Because don't forget, this is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, from the end of the web to your screen. Strike three, you're out.